Good morning and welcome to The Morning Edge. I'm Floyd J. Winters and here's Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. It's a cold day out there. Are you freezing to your knees and are you waiting for what's going to happen with good old ice or ISIS or whatever you fear the most? Or do you know the difference between Sharia and Mosaic law? Or aren't they really all about vengeance? Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, bone for bone, life for a life, all those vengeful things. Floyd, let's talk about that.
Well, I'd like to hear President Obama talk about it for just 1 minute and 10 seconds. Let's see what we have here. Let's see what we can do. That's not working. Let me try here.
As
there you go.
Leaders,
you got
holy
it.
Warriors in defense of Islam. That's why ISIL presumes to declare itself the Islamic State. And they propagate the notion that America and the West generally is at war with Islam. That's how they recruit. That's how they try to radicalize young people. We must never accept the premise that they put forward, because it is a lie. Nor should we grant these terrorists the religious legitimacy that they seek. They are not religious leaders, they're terrorists.
That's not a problem. I'm just looking at the red light.
Okay.
And we are not at war with Islam. We are at war with people who have perverted Islam.
We are not at war with Islam. We're at war with the people who have perverted Islam. Now, what do you think about those statements? If you have a thought on this topic, give us a call at 941-745-1490. Augie, what do you think about that comment?
Well, I think the problem we have is that Christians and Jews and others all follow the laws of Moses. And they'll say, well, the Ten Commandments, you know, and in some, as is said to me recently, no, we don't quite believe in that. We believe that Jesus' law was different, the law of love and forgiveness. Well, that is probably the key, isn't it? It's a philosophical argument that's pretty important, because when you think that you're going to decide what someone believes, an infidel believes as he believes, well, that's why they call him an infidel, so we can do to him or her what we choose. So when you start warring against yourself, your humanity, you come up with laws that allow you to do that. And the Ten Commandments all have that or else factor. Thou shalt not or else. You shalt not this or else.
You'll be stoned to death. You can be stoned to death for, actually, technically, you can be stoned to death for eating hot dogs while watching the Super Bowl on Sunday.
And it was pork.
Well, hot dog. Well, if it's made with pork, but the pig skin is made of pork, isn't it?
Oh,
that is the football that they're throwing around. Isn't that
and
made from
they
pig?
And they let the air out, they cheat on the game.
And you're also at a football game.
Yeah.
You're sitting there on Sunday. The people are working there for pay who are selling you your hot dogs, selling
they're
you your
violating
beers.
Violating the Sabbath.
And technically, they should be stoned.
Well, but you know, when people were stoned, they did a newspaper. What was that called? A Rolling Stoner. But and in any event,
he's older than I am.
Yeah. When that JC guy got out there and among the people, and this woman got caught in adultery, they didn't drag the man in to be stoned, although they do that once in a while. They dragged the woman and they put her there and were proceeding to begin to stone her, and he said, what am I going to do about this? Am I going to do a magic act, a miracle act? How am I going to save this woman? He knelt down in the sand there next to where she was whimpering and weeping with her imminent death at hand in the heat of the sun, and looked at the shadows of the people standing above with the rocks in their hand ready to throw her father, her brother, whoever, all men, of course, with the right to kill in the name of Allah, all in the name of Allah, in the name of God, in the name of some higher thing. In any event, he started to write in the sand, but name by name. Hey, Joe, here, I'm writing about you. These are your sins. This is Peter. These are your sins. This is John. These are your sins. And as he got to the third and fourth person, they all started to follow their shadows away, out of fear. Because what he was doing was threatening them with the same thing they were going to do to the women. He was going to charge them with whatever sin when he said, whatsoever you do to whatever, you do to me.
These the least of my brethren you do unto me. Yeah. Let he who cast the first stone be without sin.
Exactly. But that was after he cited their sins. Mm-hmm. Because they would not have looked at him as a nut if he hadn't done it that way. But this way, it was a very down-to-earth, in the shadows, in the sun, in the face of... And then we see what ISIS does. They do it out in the open. Look at what we do, how we declare our loyalty to our God in the name of Sharia or the Ten Commandments. They're one and the same in many respects. The effect is the same. It's all about getting even. Well, when you exact death upon someone, you lower yourself to that person's level. You become a murderer. And it's the same thing with everything we say we protect and believe in the Constitution of this country is designed to protect someone else's rights.
Well, they weren't getting even with the 21 Coptic Christians that they beheaded this past week.
You don't get even when you kill.
Yeah, but there wasn't anything that those people did other than being non-Islamic.
They were purifying those people in the eyes of their God.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, I'm just telling you what that I'm interpreting, of course, and perhaps imagining... But I think it's a fair, reasonable conclusion. Only insane people would keep doing the same thing. Well, maybe that's the real answer, Floyd. Are they really insane? And are they preaching insanity? And who and where does that happen? Where does that come from? Where does that originate? By golly, it's one of our big buddies. It's called Saudi Arabia. They have the madrasas. They have the jihadists coming right out of there with their message to the poor, the uninformed, the ignorant, and sometimes those who are more cynical, the intelligent, who use all the rest and send them out to down to women with bombs attached to their breasts in order to carry out this vengeance on the world.
Well, it's interesting. Iran actually allowed women to have rights, more rights than Saudi Arabia allows women
to
have.
Well, that wouldn't be hard.
But it's interesting. Here we want to pose ourselves as the enemy of Iran, which did not send a single terrorist to the United States at 9/11. 15 of the 19 hijackers came from oil-rich, Bush-friendly Saudi Arabia. None of them came from Iran. None of them came from Iraq. Both Iran and Iraq allowed women's rights. Iraq actually had a Christian community until we went into Iraq for Iraqi freedom. They actually had a Christian community for a while. Saudi Arabia was a whole different critter.
Christian crosses the border of Saudi.
And yet at the same token, they're the ones where the hijackers came from. That's the birthplace of Osama bin Laden and his family. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. But the topic here that Barack Obama is stating, we'll play it again, see if you can listen to it.
And we are not at war with Islam. We are at war with people who have perverted Islam.
We're not at war with Islam. We're at war with people who have perverted Islam. Now, there's a billion Muslims or Islamic people in the world. And that's the question that I wanted to explore. What do we do? Do we basically turn ourselves against all that, a huge portion of the world's population, and declare them all terrorist? I don't understand exactly where we're supposed to go. Barack Obama is in a very, very difficult position. We had been attacked at Boston. France has been attacked. Denmark has been attacked. We were attacked in New York. There have been synagogues attacked in the United States and in other countries, whether it's Germany and all throughout Europe lately, Britain and Canada, it's been attacked. But are these people in the same line as the other billion people are Muslims who are not terrorists?
Well, it's always about money, not the numbers of people that are out there. I mean, we're going to India to make alliances there. That's a large population of English-speaking people, highly intelligent people with a lot of poverty, and they have their problems in that regard. Their chief symbol is basically a mausoleum, and it's what is the name of that fantastic place?
Taj Mahal.
The Taj Mahal. And mausoleum to death. So, but it's Hindus and and others in that country are all basically about life. Shiva, the god of fertility and life itself. So if we're going to understand the world better, do better for ourselves and better for the world, then we have to care about others and look at others as not just others and something to do away with. As a woman from the State Department just said, you can't kill your way out of the situation, Floyd. It's not going to work. And you can't bomb the hell out of them. And Iran is being pulled in to the argument by some of the more conservative people. When you cited Iran, I totally agree with you. We created a mess with Iran back in 53, the setting down of their entire government, including their parliament, imprisoning their leader Mossadegh. And we wondered why the Ayatollah came out of retirement in Paris or out of seclusion and came down in 80. It was because 1980, because of the fact that we had done what we had done. They were going to react finally to our embarrassing humiliation that we did to Iran, unfairly so, and the imposing of the Shah with the Savak. Savak were their version of the Nazis who persecuted the Iranian people. And there's 90 million, roughly 90 million people in Iran that were trying to negotiate a nuclear peace deal. Nuclear peace so that they have a reactor that they can produce energy and do other things that they choose to do, like France, like Pakistan, like Israel, like other developed countries, like all of that. And when we're going to point the fingers of who's the terrorist, it certainly is not Iran. We sent an apology 2 years ago to Iran that we regretted 1953, and we should not have done that. That was under the signature of Allen Dulles, whose brother was John Foster, the Secretary of State, Allen being the head of the CIA at the time. So a lot of what our actions have gotten us in trouble for, Floyd, is this past behavior that comes back to haunt us. Some people don't forget history, and some people don't know history. And
some people don't learn from history.
And others don't learn from history as well. So what happens to you if you don't, you're in any of those camps?
I'm going
to
repeat the same exact mistakes we made in the past, whether it's Vietnam or Afghanistan. The Soviets had a problem in Afghanistan, the same problem we've had in Afghanistan. And perhaps right here with ISIS is going on. But the issue I'm looking at is we have the Sunni population in Saudi Arabia that has been the home to Al-Qaeda, the birthplace to Al-Qaeda, the Saudi Peninsula with Yemen and Saudi Arabia. And then we have the Shiite population of Iran, which is opposed to that. And yet we decide to align ourselves to the Sunnis and not to the opposite. It's weird. But both parts have these radical elements to them.
Well, we put out what people need to understand a little bit, and some do and some don't, and some don't care. And maybe that's the bigger problem. Maybe we just don't care enough until we're drug in by kicking and screaming into a mess. Boots on the ground. John McCain wants boots on the ground. Does he want a draft? No. He wants to continue the mercenary army. The whole business of going to war with people we don't begin to understand is a problem. So it's just a situation now. We've got ourselves up against the wall. Are we going to put money forward? Well, this president, you know, he's been accused of this, that, or the other thing. In any event, are we going to go to war? The Sunnis, as Floyd mentioned, they're the secular Sunnis, which Saddam Hussein was a secular Sunni. The Sunnis of Saudi Arabia, which are the more jihadist. In fact, they teach jihad, which is a struggle to commit a war against the West and against the infidels.
And if
everywhere.
I may, 1 second, that's exactly the goal of Osama bin Laden. He was hoping that we would go and fight them on their ground, in their territory, and it would be the death of the Western nations. That was exactly what he accomplished in Afghanistan in the 1980s with the Russians, and it broke apart the Soviet Union, which is much smaller and much weaker than it had been before. And he was hoping to also involve the United States in that particular part of the area to basically help to destroy the culture and destroy the power of the Western nations. And he, unfortunately, has been successful in drawing us in, and ISIS is now an extension of what Osama bin Laden stood for. It's a shame. We've given him what he wanted by going into Iraq, which was not the issue, which did not send a single bomber at 9/11, by going into Iraq, and weakening that country and allowing Al-Qaeda to now exist in Iraq. There was no significant element of Al-Qaeda in Iraq before we invaded Iraq and took down Saddam Hussein. And as a consequence, now ISIS is there, and in Syria as well, and we've given Osama bin Laden exactly what he wanted, the Americans involved, and that's a big issue right now. Should we have boots in the ground? Should we basically give even more to Osama bin Laden?
Wasn't it Br'er Rabbit says, don't throw me into the briar patch? Please, please don't, because that was where he did his best deeds, the rabbit. He could run around that briar patch, and you could get stuck pretty bad if you went in.
If you think about the American Revolution, here we are, just a small group of a few colonies, 13 colonies, and Britain was the strongest, most powerful nation in the whole world, and they couldn't put down this small little rebellion against these colonies. Because they're traveling 1,000 miles across the sea to a foreign nation and fighting in our terrain.
Foreign land. But
in a foreign, and they're fighting in our terrain. And that's exactly what Osama bin Laden wanted. Have the Americans fight in Afghanistan. Have the Americans fight in Syria. Have the Americans fight in Iraq in their terrain. And have them have to have all the supplies and logistics and the costs and the money and the $1 trillion we've spent and the 4,000 dead we've given and the tens of thousands of wounded in their terrain, in their briar patch. And that's unfortunately what has occurred.
Well, it's always interesting how these Aesop's fables types of things come back to haunt us in curious ways. But we put to death the people, or we cause their death, in the case of Saddam Hussein. And who was the guy that now is in...
Gaddafi?
Gaddafi. The man had a closet full of robes, and those robes were different tribes that he would put their clothing on when he had to go meet with their people. He knew those people. We put them down. We have no clue as a country how to manage these countries with the different tribes and so forth. And coming back to the Sunni... radicals and extremes. They're Sunni moderates. They're Sunni seculars. And Saddam Hussein was a secular Sunni. But if a
secular, again, just in case you don't know, it means you're not very a real religious person. You're more of a cultural, governmental person, non-religious
some
type.
Some people call them Presbyterians.
but secular means that you're not wearing the Bible and the robes and the crown on your head. Instead, you're governing for the people as opposed to for your particular god or religion.
Well, anyway, yeah, exactly right. And that's the point. And he didn't. And, of course, all of these leaders saw money and control as a factor. And what do we want to do in those countries? Find a way. We're not going to democratize those people who are religionists at the heart, who believe that religion and government are one thing. When you do that, you destroy any idea of democracy. There's not a possibility of that in many of these places. Iran, ironically, has had a parliamentary system and a president, and we ruined that over oil then in 1953.
And you mentioned money. That's our motivation, has been our motivation, and most people, they do realize this, whether they're on the left or on the right, that money and oil has been a big motivation for what's occurred in the Middle East. We came to America, and we end up killing millions of Indians over gold, the concept of gold. And we had slavery here in America over the idea of tobacco and riches from that. And we had the triangular trade of rum and slaves for money. So we've had gold, the conquest of the American Indians, the conquest of the black nations for money. And again, the conquest of the Muslims for oil. Unfortunately, there are perverted versions of Islam. And there are perverted versions of Christianity because the Christians sent their priests and their clerics over here to America to kill the heathens or to Christianize the heathens, the Indians. They were just people who should be exterminated. They brought their big attack dogs and their guns to go after these people in the name of Christ and the name of gold. And unfortunately, the founding of America, going back to slavery,
well, all
and
the, way through
the
South
quest
America.
Of gold, yeah, it was horrible what occurred there. And these were Christians. Were these perverted Christians? Were these symbolic of all the Christians in the world? Or were these symbolic of the Christians who were interested in gold and in oil?
Well, I think the exploits of the crusaders in dominating the Muslims and And now you have ministers running around saying, well, no, they were doing it in retaliation to being attacked themselves to try to justify the Crusaders. The Inquisition, the imposition of faith upon people through fire, through torture, through any means possible. All of these things in the name, and the forced immigration of blacks into this country, and by the Dutch West Indies and by the Brits and their ships hauling people around the world to continue business as usual, to make business a way of life through slavery. It's what we've seen so much, Floyd. Right now the president's being trying to rationalize some, make reasonable a relationship to the various religions at a time when people are being pulled apart over religion in this country. And if you don't go to war against this group of religionists, well, you're unfaithful, you're unpatriotic, and Rudolph Giuliani just made a big blast against Obama, as suggesting he was not somehow caring about his own country, didn't say he loved America and all of that sort of thing. Putting words to deeds as opposed to deeds to action, whole different animal.
And we're not attacking Christians, we're not attacking Muslims, we're just looking at some facts that I don't believe most Christians are interested in the profit from oil, the profit from gold in the old days, or the profit from tobacco. I think that most Christians are interested in living a good life and treating their neighbors as you'd treat yourself.
Yeah, but unless you're talking about the price of gasoline.
unfortunately, it seems that way sometimes. And the same thing, there's a billion Muslims. Now, are you going to blame all the Christians? When the Christians went in the crusade, they killed over 12,000 Jews on their way. By the way, these are Jews. They killed Christ, so we should kill them as well. The Christians, between the witch hunts, the Inquisition, the Crusades, and the conquest of India, the conquest of parts of Africa, the slave trades, the conquest of the Americas in the search for gold, we have a lot of blood stained in our history as well. And the same thing happens for some of the Islamics, extremists that we have. And that's this topic we'd like to look at in a moment. We're going to take a commercial break for a new sponsor.
Our number is 941-745. If you wish to talk, we were off the air on Wednesday. We're sorry for that.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
With the animals.
So let's talk about that for a second. He treats two-legged patients as well.
Yeah.
He's a vet who treats.
No, he's a chiropractor.
Oh, chiropractor. Oh, okay.
So Mark D'Amato is an interesting guy, and he's got 2 days a week he does woof woof, and half a day on Friday, and so two and a half, so therefore roughly half a week. He's taking care of animals. And what happened, he's got an interesting story. It shows the humanity of people who are in that profession, and he showed it. He was called, he was at the Kentucky Derby, and Mark he noticed his one horse was having a problem, and he said, I think I can fix that animal's problem. So the person said, come and see me. So he goes to this guy's place, or what do you call that, where you have keep horses?
Stable?
Stables, yeah. And he sees his horse tied to a post, and the horse is just, his head is to one side, tied to the thing, and he's being whipped by his trainer to move in a certain direction. And he unties him, and the horse puts his head the other way. And he runs with his head to the, instead of to the right side, he runs it to the left side. And so he says, well, let me see if I can help. And so he does some adjustment on this horse. They get the horse calmed down, who's afraid of his trainer, and who evidently believed in persecution and torture, because Mark gets the thing straightened out to where the horse has got his head in the right direction, the normal direction, and is without the pain that he was suffering all along. He, I suppose, or she, a mare if it was that. But the man has done some nice things with animals, as I understand it, and we've had a few people in here in the studio talking about how Manatee County does things with dogs, so I'm sure some of those people might be interested in Mark D'Amato in that regard. And if you do decide to go to Mark D'Amato, he's in Sarasota. He is very good with humans, and he's helped me in a few situations. But he's down, if you know US 41 going through Sarasota, he's down below Bee Ridge Road on the west side of the road. And you go in there on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday in the mornings and just give them your name, and they'll work you in and give you some help. If you've got a neck problem, back problem, whatever, a knee problem perhaps. Anyway, so he's done some good work, so I'm giving him, Mark, an additional commercial this morning. But we can go back to talking about the animals that walk around with guns and start wars and so forth. But speaking of how people were treated like animals, and what found our, we hear people talk about our founding fathers. I got a little something here that I'd like to read. This is Erica Armstrong Dunbar. She's an associate professor of Black Studies and history of it at the University of Delaware. Is the author of Fragile Freedom of African American Women and Emancipation in the Antebellum City. When he was 11 years old, Washington inherited 10 slaves from his father's estate. He continued to acquire slaves, some through the death of family members and others through direct purchase. Washington's catch of enslaved people peaked in 1759 when he married the wealthy widow Martha Dandridge Custis. His new wife brought more than 80 slaves to the estate at Mount Vernon on the eve of the American Revolution. Nearly 150 souls were counted as part of the property there. Martha did it. She had a slave for herself. And, let's see, Washington almost made it through his two terms without a major incident involving his slave ownership. On the spring evening of May of 1796, Ona Judge, the Washington's 22-year-old slave woman, slipped away from the president's house in Philadelphia. At 15, she had joined the Washingtons on their tour of northern living. She was among a small cohort of 9 slaves who lived with the president's family in Philadelphia. Judge was Martha Washington's first attendant. She took care of Martha's personal needs. What prompted Judge's decision to bolt was Martha Washington's plan to give her as a gift to her granddaughter, a wedding gift. Judge fled Philadelphia to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, a city with 360 free black people, virtually no slaves. Within a few months of her arrival, Judge married Jack Staines, a free black sailor with whom she had 3 children. Judge and her offspring were vulnerable to slave catchers. They lived as free people, but legally belonged to Martha Washington. And it goes on beyond that. But this was one of our founding fathers, and he did not free his slaves at all until he died. His wife kept her slaves for quite a long time, and they were kept in the estate past her death. So there's a picture now of our one of our signers of our of the Revolution, George Washington, who didn't just cut down the cherry tree, but he cut down civil rights pretty effectively, and they sent slave catchers after Ona Judge, and it became a pattern. In fact, the stimulus for the book Uncle Tom's Cabin was based upon slave catchers chasing slaves over the ice in the Ohio River in the basin in near Cincinnati, the river basin there. The ice would freeze up, and the slaves would run across the frozen ice with dogs on their heels. And it's treated as a sentimental melodrama, but it's pretty violent. We've heard Chloe, well, the name of the woman was involved in the chase by the dogs. That was her name. So this is the kind of thing that's part of our real history, not our imagined history, cherry trees on the Potomac and things like that. But it's an interesting sidelight. Do you have any thoughts, any concerns, or any considerations? If you think we're off the air permanently because of Wednesday, we're very sorry for that. But 941-745-1490, give us a call. Floyd, do you have any more thoughts on this?
Well, I was hoping to, again, take a look at the idea of the justification of slavery. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was based upon both financial and also religious reasons. There was the idea that our religion and our race is superior. The white race and the white religion of Christianity was superior to the barbaric, the heathen race of the Indians here in America, of the blacks in Africa. And there was always this justification. And again, slavery was instituted for financial reasons, whether it was picking tobacco, whatever the reason may be. It was cheap labor. You pay for the food and pay for substandard housing, and you get this person who works for you indefinitely and their children. And it's an interesting part of our history that goes on that you bring up. But are we going to condemn all the Americans, whether it's Washington or the slave owners of the South or all the Americans for the slavery? Because there are a lot of people who risked their lives and died to free the slaves who were white, whether it was in Selma, Alabama, or whether it was during before the Civil War. There were a lot of whites who died, put their lives in the line to basically protect and to free the blacks in both of the 1800s and the 1900s.
Well, the president lost his life at the time for committing us to the Civil War. And the
President Lincoln,
that great man, who then at the same time, during the spending of monies for a war, and who introduced Harry Beecher Stowe to the White House and to the industrialists at the time, and basically got through the wives of the industrialists, got them to finance the clothing for the soldiers. Ended up selling clothing to both sides, however, so they made money either way. But it was initiated that way, and he said at the time, Harry Beecher Stowe, that this is a little lady that started the Civil War by upsetting people's vision of what the obedient slave was really all about or likely to be about, and the monstrous behavior that went on to maintain the slavery. But it was a business. And if you sold cattle, each piece of cattle was worth something. The meat was worth selling on the market. And in the case of slaves, the flesh of slaves wasn't to be eaten, but it was to be used to pull and push and to pick the cotton and at whatever age level. And the value of slaves was flesh and bone. They were sold like cattle on the stocks. In the stocks and out in the public, naked many times. There are still those in St. Augustine, which was a meeting point where the fort was in St. Augustine. And you have situations like that that are reminders, small reminders, and there's more in the Carolinas. There's more historical evidence showing that you can witness what happened and how the people were used. But it was a $4.5 billion market in those days, not in today's dollars, in the dollars of that time. And so the slave got away, they were worth money. It was about money and so much that they're stated as having the three-fifths, I think it's three-fifths of the value of a person. And a guest walked in on four legs talking about animals. And three guests. There you go, a two-legged and two four-legged. But anyway, we have a situation where you have people treated like animals and bought and sold just you would, like you would any and all. He hears me talking.
Yeah, we have animals in here right now.
We've been invaded.
Four-legged animals, beautiful ones though.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. Are you? Well, we're happy. Oh, do you want to come on the air? Or do you want to bark? Would you like to bark? Would you say? Hey, okay. I have a cold, so I understand a coughing bark. But anyway, what's his name, Val?
That one's Bruin.
Bruin?
Okay. Yes. And that's one
thing. Okay. Well, goodbye, Bruin. Go.
Val, our studio manager, came in with her two friends here. And one is dark gray brown, and the other one is kind of a camel colored brown. And they're desperate to get their voice spoken. And so we're going to. But anyway, that deviation goes away and lightens up the subject. So if you have any thoughts on this cold Friday morning and you'd like to have change the subject and go some other place with it, we're fine with that. At the same time, we can talk about what's happened with Greece and Germany, and they're not willing to yield. The Germans are unwilling to yield on the debt and what's going to happen there. And I do think that the Germans have a problem, and that they, at the end of World War II, whether you believe they deserved it or not, we did the Marshall Plan. We did a lot of things to rebuild Germany, because what we were doing at the time was rebuilding a market for our products and would sell back and forth, which eventually has happened. And the Germans today are the prosperous, our most prosperous country in Western Europe, which is prosperous on its own terms. And Germany and France together comprise about 150 million people, and 90 or so for Germany and 60 for France. And in those countries, both of those countries, they have fairly good economic circumstance, but they also have the burden, Turks in Germany and the Muslims in France, and we've seen what's happened there. But coming back to Greece, small country, not that many people, I'm not sure the population is maybe 5 million or something like that, but the debt is huge, and it's like $350 billion, and Germany's saying, no, they gotta borrow, they gotta do this. They're broken, just as Germany was broken at the end of World War II. So if you're going to be the dominant one, then you've got to have forgiveness under your belt to see how you can give these people a chance to survive. If you break them completely, there won't be anything in your hands anyway. What have you accomplished? So how do you pay debt back? Well, you build infrastructure, you do those kinds of things, and make their tourist industry stronger, bring more shipping to Greece, things like that. And you do more business down the road. And you look down the road, what happens if it's broken, if it pulls away from the euro? What happens if Spain pulls out? What happens if Italy pulls out? What happens if Portugal? What was that now? Spain, Portugal, Italy, and Greece. How does that go? Sprig or something like that? That's been cited, and the euro has been falling steadily. Was it, let me think, it was 140 to the dollar back in September. It's down to about 110 to the dollar right now, and going down. And if Greece goes, I think the euro goes with it. And it's a serious, serious economic world problem. And the Weimar Republic is cited in an article by Paul Krugman. So, and that's what I was kind of rehearsing here. Do we have a caller?
We have a caller, familiar caller.
Okay.
From St. Petersburg. Welcome, Lawrence. You're on the Morning Edge.
Good morning, Lawrence.
I'm going to see if I can put him on so he can. There we go.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lawrence. What's up?
I was wondering what you think about the scenario with Bibi Netanyahu and speaking before the Congress next month in a few weeks, and of its importance or lack of importance or whatever.
It's hugely important, Lawrence. I think it's very important depending on what he says, I think that will maybe change the color of the picture a bit. If he comes on with his diatribe against Iran and trying to stop the nuclear deal and things like that, then he will effectively pull in the crazies in the Republican Party and the conservatives and do damage to himself. He may end up, I was just going to finish. He's going to damage himself and I think possibly lose his own election.
So you feel that it's inappropriate for the Prime Minister of Israel to speak of the scenario of Iran nuking themselves up? You think that would be inappropriate to speak to their number one ally?
I think that's starting with a premise of a conclusion before, the lead up of the point of view of being worried about what Iran does. Iran does with the nuclear situation is, first of all, if Iran were to have the bomb and were to be the only country to ever execute it outside of the United States, doing it to Japan, they would be basically killing themselves, because where is Israel relative to Iran?
I'm trying to follow you. So,
well, do you know where it's the location? Israel is west?
Yes, I do.
And what happens with prevailing winds?
Okay. So they would just be stupid to wipe them off the map like they say they're going to do.
Well, wouldn't they basically affect...
Yeah, them?
Well, no, let me finish the point then. The point is...
Finish it. You've stolen the whole conversation. There's no give and take here.
Well, I'm just going to finish
give it out this way.
I'm just... The cloud would come back over Iran. They'd be killing and poisoning themselves as a result of that.
Oh, how stupid would they be, huh?
If you're going to try to kill somebody, you sure don't want to do it to the West.
So Lawrence, what's the constructive point you have to offer as an alternative?
Well, the constructive point is, I think that you ought to be talking about that scenario and the importance of allowing Prime Minister Netanyahu to speak his piece, as opposed to the Democrats that are trying to cloud the issue and not even attend his speech and the importance of it. I think it's
very important. I don't say that.
I agree it's important, too. And he's also a wonderful speaker. He makes his point very, very well.
Educated in the United States.
And I think that he is meritorious as far as listening to this gentleman talk. It's something we should all listen to. He does give very good speeches, and he makes excellent points.
Well, the same thing has been said about Obama, a great speech maker. It's always in the content, isn't it? So I don't disagree with him. He's articulate. He's got an agenda, and he's coming forward. I think the problem is the way he presents his agenda. He could have done the same thing, gone to the Congress and simply said and notified the White House as a courtesy. That's the issue. He's not very courteous. He's impolite, and I think polite.
Well, I beg to disagree with you.
Okay,
the
sure.
issue is about the safety and existence of Israel and the nuclear bomb that Iran is about to procure. And that's what it's about.
They're procuring a nuclear bomb? How is Iran procuring a nuclear bomb?
Completing the process.
Oh, the nuclear. Yeah. Well, let me tell you, there is a country with, I think there's 100 million, a few more people than Iran. It's called Pakistan, and they've had the bomb for a long, long time.
I was talking about Iran.
I know, and I'm making a parallel here, an analogy. And Pakistan has the nuclear capacity to do what you're talking about. Has had it.
Pakistan said that they would revel in the obliteration of Israel into the ocean.
Yep, they've said it more than a few times.
Pakistan has?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Oh,
sir.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, Israel believes that if anybody makes that type of assertion or comment or desire, that they can, if they can, try to eliminate that country from getting the bomb.
Mm-hmm. Well, they don't have to do
but,
that.
But obviously you don't agree with that.
Well, I think...
Everyone does it.
Everybody is doing it. That's the
problem.
Yeah,
yeah, hell yeah.
So anybody who just has the... Well,
why are the Democrats not going to boycott the speech from Netanyahu?
Why are they going to boycott is your question, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, why are they? Because they feel that he's reckless. And he's reckless with the truth, I think, as well.
Interesting.
Smart, but reckless with the truth. And I think that's kind of a problem we have. You know, when you're on one side or the other of an issue, and you find no way to bridge that issue, then you and this is kind of what Netanyahu presents, is this intransigent bully. He's somewhat. I'm trying to think who's another bully on. And that Chris Christie is a good example of a bully. Those kinds of people.
Al Sharpton.
In the past, you might have been right. The Tawana Brawley thing, you've beaten to death, Lawrence. I understand that. But the point is that right now, here and now, in the here and now, in the present, these guys are bullies, and they're not respected in their own country.
I'm going to wipe you off the face of the earth.
What are you talking about,
Lawrence? Lawrence, I agree with your concern.
Yeah. Does that bother you?
It absolutely bothers me. And
okay,
I agree.
And the phrase "never again" that doesn't. You got excuses why you should just ignore that.
Lawrence, I'm not ignoring it. I absolutely agree with your point. I understand where Netanyahu is coming from.
Maybe I'm also a little too nuanced.
Lawrence, don't fight with the person who's agreeing with you, buddy. At the same time, I agree with Obama too. You're walking this tightrope right here. And you want to figure out, here you have the Sunni nation, and you also have the Sunnis and Shiites in Iran, and you have these two different powers, these Islamic Muslims, who actually are, in a sense, at war with each other in many ways. They kill more of each other than they kill Americans and they kill Westerners. They kill more Muslims and more Islamics than they do Westerners.
Yeah, I think you're kind of, well, and I don't the, quite. I think these.
And you're in a situation for political.
Let me ask Lawrence a question. Why would a country like Israel take alliance with a country that basically financed and paid for the tearing down of the blowing up of the towers, Saudi Arabia and Israel? Why would they make that alliance? Because they were doing it.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm obviously not as intellectually tuned in as you.
Well, America and Israel, they treat the Saudis in a lot more gentler way than they do the people of Iran. And it's an interesting situation. Why are we friends with the Saudis? They're the ones who sent the 9/11 attackers to America. Why are we friends with these people? Because there's this oil situation. And it's also the balance.
Are there any circumstances that Iran should be able to have a nuclear weapon? Yes or no?
I would say no. Audie may say yes, but I would say no.
Okay, what about you, August?
I say in terms of nuclear power.
Yes or no?
In terms of nuclear power for energy, I say yes.
Well, you know. That's quite nuanced, August. Yeah. Very good.
And I take a little disagreement with that. Iran does have also oil. And they're not really in a problem as far as the energy goes. They don't really have an energy crisis.
They're an exporter.
They're an exporter of oil.
It's a chunk of their economy.
And they don't really need it for energy. They need it for prestige and to simply say, we can do this.
Well, if we keep burning oil for every source and every solution, but I don't believe
August,
in nuclear
energy. August, you'll like this closing comment.
Sure.
We have a feckless president. Mm. And that is the total scenario, and I thought you'd enjoy that.
That's a nice
because
word.
That's a big word.
Thank you for your last comments.
Golly
Lawrence.
Gee whiz, I'm going to look up feckless.
Yeah, we appreciate your comments. Okay, well, have a good day, buddy, okay?
Thank you very much, Lawrence. You know, Lawrence is always a stimulus, and I love a good argument, argument being non-contentious. And
it would be nice to have him. He was better. I got to give him credit. He was much better than he has been.
I listened to him the other day on another show, and he was almost begging the person to let him stay on longer. And that was amazing. We must have helped condition that situation.
Okay. But, I agree with part of what Lawrence says. What I don't want to do is just...
We can disagree. You and I can both disagree.
And we can disagree as gentlemen. We can disagree in an exploration for the truth and probably the best path forward. And that's the problem I see right now with the political systems, Republicans and the Democrats. I see the ugliness on both sides. There are so many ways we can solve the problems of the world if they just would work together.
You touched on, you're part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Which are you? I mean, that's the issue. How do we solve these things? And I mentioned about Netanyahu coming before the Congress. Had he simply notified or said something to the White House in advance of doing it, but he went right to Boehner. And he went right to the divisions within this country to add to the division, to make it worse. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to, and you represent maybe 5 million people, and you are receiving monies in this from this country, one of the biggest sources of foreign aid is Israel. We send billions in the vicinity of 3 to 5, depending on where you're looking. And the other one being Egypt, of the $15 billion we do in foreign aid, it goes to those two countries. They get two-thirds of it. So, and when they invite people to come to Israel, it's always on, frankly, on the American dole. I mean, they say, come out of, get out of Europe. It's not safe. Come back to Israel. Come to your homeland. Lovely, lovely. And who's going to pay for that? The American taxpayer. We are subsidizing the hell out of. If you don't like subsidy of public programs, then you don't like what we're doing for Israel. Free air conditioning, free this, free that, free the other. Where do they get the land to do all of this for these new immigrants to come into Israel? They get it from the Palestinians.
That's a problem that I have right there. I do have a problem with that. Israel is also, though, this buffer that we have, this ally against
the... I've always called them the bulldog in the Mideast.
Yeah. They are. They are awesome warriors. Yeah. Their population is about 8 million. They're about half the population of Florida. They are a great and powerful nation in many respects, and they do basically balance the problem in the Middle East.
They have a very powerful ally in this country, and it's AIPAC, and he's going to speak to AIPAC, which we didn't get to, and what's he going to say there? So we're coming to the end of the show, and Monday we'll be back. Towers aside, we'll probably have a show. I'm sure we'll have Lawrence perhaps come on again and finish this conversation or keep it in suspended belief.
And thank you very much for listening to The Morning Edge on 1490 AM.
Two separate qualifying states. Other terms and conditions apply. Details at choicehotels.com.
You're listening to 1490 AM. WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.